This is the Real Estate Rookie episode 183.
Sometimes we got to be aware of like our biases of like, okay, this may not be a place I may want to travel, but this is the data proves that there's a huge demand. And so now it's changed my attitude around, okay, just because maybe I don't like this particular vacation rental market, it may not mean that it's in high demand. So I'm going to default to Tony. He's like the geek when it comes to software, and it's like, he busts out all this like data, and I'm like, sold, I'm good, okay.
My name is Ashley Kerr, and I'm here with my co-host, Tony Robinson.
And welcome to the Real Estate Rookie Podcast, where every week, twice a week, we give you the inspiration, information, and education you need to become a real estate investor. So Ashley Kerr, what is going on?
Not much. I've dropped my crutches, so I was allowed to get rid of them. So now I'm just hobbling around.
Just hobbling, yeah.
So I actually took a impromptu road trip to Florida last week. And so I had to have my crutches for about half the road trip. And then the second half, I got to get rid of them. And yeah,
there you go.
So it was nice.
It's progress.
What about you, Tony? Yeah. What's new? How's your foot?
My foot is also healing. I took my boot off today for the first time, so we'll see how it does. But keeping busy. We're actually going to be out in your neck of the woods in like 4 days. Like 4 days. Yeah, we're going to be out in Western New York in like 4 days. We just bought a bed and breakfast out there, so we're excited to check that out. And then as soon as I get back, we're actually going to be walking the Big Bear Resort that we have under contract with our contractor, so we can start getting the bids together. So, and then after that, we leave to Denver for like 3 days for the rookie boot camp, so I'll barely be home over the next week, but it's all for a good cause.
Yeah, and actually, Tony, since we've been recording this podcast, I mean, a ton of snow has accumulated outside, so hopefully by the time you get here, it's all melted.
It's melted, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Yeah. I'll bring some good California weather with me.
Yeah. So today we have a very special guest on. Tony, who is our guest today?
So today we've got none other than my partner in Alpha Geek Capital, Mr. Omid Tiranirad. So Omid's actually Sarah, my wife, they're cousins, but he's the third leg of our tripod when it comes to running Alpha Geek Capital. And he just recently quit his job. So we kind of talk about his journey of going from, you know, he was at the same company for almost 18 years and kind of taking that leap from doing that to coming full time with us in the business. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, yeah, we touch on that for sure, him quitting his job, but we'll also go into partnerships and how you guys have structured it, how you guys kind of started out, and also what it looks like now, what are the roles and responsibilities. So if you've been thinking of getting a partner, this is a great episode to listen to as to how they structured their partnership, how they keep the lines of communication open, alignment, everything like that that you need in a good, solid partnership.
Are current interest rates making you depressed about cash flow? What if it didn't have to be that way? Rent to Retirement has 2.99% seller financing available on turnkey properties. You heard that right. That's a seller financed 2.99% interest rate where the average cash flow is over $900 per month. They also have options where you can put as low as 5% down on multiple investment properties with no PMI. Rent to Retirement is the nation's leading turnkey investment company that understands what it takes to be successful in today's dynamic real estate market. Their reputation speaks for itself with more 5-star reviews than any other company on the BiggerPockets website. Rent to Retirement offers fully turnkey properties that are newly built or renovated, leased and managed, allowing you to invest with confidence in the markets that offer the best returns. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's rent. TORetirement.com or text REI to 33777. Again, text REI to 33777.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right. Get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a complete breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. So Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability and earnings. With Plaid certified tenant income and asset reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. It's time to say goodbye to that whole gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. Now, Rent Ready is included in your pro membership at Bigger Pockets. If you're not a pro, they're offering the 6-month plan for only $1. Visit rentready.com. That's RENTREDI.com and use the code BP Investor. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, Investor for 6 months of Rent Ready for only $1.
Omid, welcome to the show. But before we really get into anything about you, tell us all the dirty details about Tony as your business partner. We want to hear it all.
Man, oh, I got so much to share. I can't wait. I don't even know where to start. So,
yeah. Omid, well, go ahead. You could start with yourself. Start from the beginning of your real estate journey. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you even decided to get into real estate.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm first generation. So my parents both came from different countries, very different backgrounds. But I think the common values that they had were, okay, you're going to pursue the American dream. So that was go ahead and seek out, get good grades, go to college, get a good paying job, buy a house, have some kids, retire at 65. And so fast forward as I got my job, I got married, I bought my house. I really felt that there was like a sense of something that I was missing. And so I'd worked this corporate job at the time for 16 years. I had excelled in the job, I had moved up. And at some point I decided, okay, I needed something else, or what I was doing wasn't really fulfilling me. And so I started kind of looking in other places. I actually just like everybody else, I came across Bigger Pockets, started studying, somehow I came across Tony. I don't even know how this happened. Yeah, so, the power of social media, just like hitting a button, saying I like something that David Green posted, and this was around the time when I was getting more serious about investing, and so fast forward. Invested in as an LP and in apartment syndication on a couple deals. I mostly investing in short-term rentals, and quit my job, and now I'm here talking to you guys, which is bizarre. Like, I would have never thought that in a million years I'd be on a show with you guys.
So can I give the backstory? So yeah, so Omid he's my business partner, but he's also my wife's first cousin. So me, Sarah, and Omid were like the three-legged horse that runs Alpha Geek Capital. And obviously Sarah and Omid knew each other, they're family. And Sarah and I, we've been dating since we were 17. So like, Omid and I have seen each other at, family parties and things like that. But I wouldn't say that we were ever like super, super close before we started investing together. And what Omid was talking about when you mentioned the social media thing is, rewind to 2019. This is before I had my first deal. And Omid and I were kind of in the same space. Like, we were both, separately educating ourselves about investing in real estate. And it was actually David Green from the OG podcast. I was on his Instagram profile. He had like posted something. I clicked through, and on Instagram, it shows you followed by XYZ. And one of the people's names was on there was Omid. And I was like, what the heck? It's like, I didn't know he was into real estate. So we started talking, finds out we're both trying to do the same thing. And I actually pulled it up, Omid. So I pulled up the email. So
on October 15th, 2019, at just before 11 p.m., I sent Omid an email and I said, hey, like, I know we have been talking about maybe doing a deal together, but I got this deal. Do you want to partner on it with me? And he replied in like, I don't know, like 3 minutes. And he was like, I'm in. And that was like the, you know, the start of this long relationship. But last thing, right? The funny part is that that email that I sent, that was a Shreveport house that we ended up losing $30,000 on. So not the best start to the relationship, but it worked out.
I think really that like the takeaway, I think with that was just more like, it was really a stepping stone just to get our feet wet. And I know Tony's message is often just take action and just kind of understand. You won't know until you actually start kind of getting involved in some of the day-to-day activities. And that led us to wanting to seek out apartment syndication, to meeting, networking with a bunch of people that eventually led us to short-term rentals.
Omid, how did you guys structure this partnership? And did it take a lot of negotiating, or did you just say, well, let's do it 50-50 because we're each going to put in half of whatever that half is, money, energy? And did you have roles and responsibilities defined? Kind of go through what that structure looked like in the beginning. And also, have you made changes to that since then?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think we just kind of went in there blindly to a degree, right? So it was, you know, I think sometimes I am just like, I don't say spontaneous, but I just have an idea and I don't know necessarily how I'm going to do it. We're just going to kind of work it out along the way. I knew that Tony's skill set complemented mine. So, you know, in my line of work before, we did disc profiles. And so I would kind of like learn through interacting with people, okay, this person is a analytical person. And so for me, like being more of a, you know, I take action, but I don't necessarily know, like look at the details as much. And I know Tony is more of a analytical look at the details. So I was like, okay, he'll complement my skill set. We'll figure it out. We'll make it work. There's not that much risk in it per se, because it's not, there's no money out of pocket at the time. I mean, that at the time it was, okay, this was a burr where, the lender funded the rehab portion as well. So I was like, okay, it's not that much risk. I just want to learn. And I feel like this is a great opportunity to learn. So that's kind of how we initially started. And I think over time, as we've kind of completed different ventures, we've more clearly defined things along the way. But I think that's something that we've just kind of figured out over time.
Yeah, and actually really quick, I think that's part of the reason why Omid and I work so well together is because we're both, in some ways, you know, we're like, what's the saying? Like fire, aim, shoot or whatever. Like, you know, we'll shoot first and kind of ask questions later kind of guys. And we're both kind of go with the flow. So I think that's what made this partnership so successful, is that we're similar in that way.
When you guys structured this partnership in the beginning, was this like, we're just going to test out one deal, or let's go and see what other deals we can find right away? What did that kind of look like?
You know, there wasn't even really clear dialogue around like where it was going to evolve. It was just more like, hey, let's just do this and see what happens. And that was it. And then, you know, after that, it was, you know, I just started calling him partner. And then he's like, hey, there's this like Black Friday deal to this Rod Cleef event. Do you know who Rod Cleef is? And are you interested in multifamily? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know Rod Cleef. But, you know, if you're into it, I'm into it. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to buy the ticket. Let's go together and let's kind of learn along the way. So for us, it was just more like, okay, this is a journey and we're just going to kind of figure it out. And, you know, that's kind of what we did. And
that event was like super, I think, critical to our partnership as well, because we walked away from that event, I think, with a better sense of what we wanted to do as a partnership. And it was apartment syndication. That's what we were initially planning to do. That didn't work out, but it still kind of led us to some, you know, it led us eventually to doing the short-term rentals. But I think that, you know, spending 3 days together at this event, you know, soaking in all this like information about real estate investing, like really laid the foundation for everything we built from there on out.
Yeah, it gets you all hyped up and motivated together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ironically, I mean, you know, we've still talked to some of the same people that we met at that event, and we've been on like parallel journeys with short-term rentals, and even just like relationships we built through like a coaching program we joined. I think it all allowed us to kind of learn along the way and kind of shorten that learning span for us to kind of invest or just like understand just like the different spaces and niches in real estate. Because I think one of the biggest things is like, you know, I think we have a very big threshold for like discomfort. So for me, like just throw me kind of like what Tony said, throw me in anywhere or Tony, I'm just going to kind of figure it out and learn. And I don't mind spending time to learn it and master it. And then it was like the education piece. So like learning education about, you know, whatever the particular niche is. And, you know, are we interested in cash flow and appreciation or, you know, depreciation and all those things we kind of learn along the way. So just a bunch of different items and then identifying the niche. There's so many, I think you go to these presentations and you're like, I want to do this and I want to do that. And then, but you don't really realize, I think it's hard to kind of narrow down once you've been presented so many opportunities. Okay, what actually works or what fits your skill set or like where you are in your current like real estate journey.
What are the different roles and responsibilities you guys have in your organization now before we kind of get any further?
Yeah, so currently I tag team operations with Sarah. So Sarah and I both do operations, which that includes communication with our handyman, cleaners, addressing anything guest related. Also, I do guest relations, investor relations. So we have the funnel of the Alpha Geek website, and it leads to a calendar. And then essentially, I'm the guy. I don't know if I told somebody today I'm like the chastity belt. So you have to like get through me to get to Tony and Sarah. So like if you can't, if I'm not, you know, just so I'm like the first layer of protection in a way. So but but I'm also the guy that just kind of assesses, okay, like is, you know, I had a call today and somebody filled out a partnership or they're interested in partnership. They don't have enough funds, but they're also interested in learning. And I know you guys always talk about how can you bring value? So this person had a lot of analytical skills. We have an opportunity with like acquisitions. And so we just started talking and I loosely said, hey, you know, we may have an opportunity. And he was all in and he's going to send me his resume. But I think it's just being even able to identify parts of our business and where I can fit them in the business. But primarily, yes, the investor relations is the role. Yeah.
Oh, man, you have no idea the floodgates you just opened up. You know how many people are going to fill out that form now and start sending resumes?
Oh, God. I know. Right? I know. Oh, hopefully not. Yeah, no. I mean, you know, as long as they bring value. Yeah.
So, and Ash, you know, it took us a while to get to this point where we've got more defined roles. You know, I think when we first started, like there was, you know, we were all just kind of doing everything, you know, and kind of stepping on each other's toes and doing all these different things. But as the business has matured, we've really kind of settled into our different roles. So yeah, Omid and Sarah handle all the guest communications. Omid's handling all the partnership relationships. I'm focused more so on like the acquisitions. You know, like I think most of the deals we found so far have been, you know, from me kind of doing a lot of that work. And then I handle a lot of like the technology pieces, right? Like our property management software, our pricing tool, our email automation tools. So we've really kind of settled into our groove now that we've been doing this for, you know, a little over 2 years now.
So going forward with your partnership, you guys are building your team. Can you kind of talk about, Omid, you touched it a little in the beginning, what your strategy is now and your focus now going forward?
Yeah, so I think like specifically we're continuing to grow like the partnerships, and so Tony does acquisitions. For me specifically, we're looking to identify people that kind of fit the culture. So, you know, just I think there's a lot of investors out there. There's a lot of people that there's a lot of capital, and I think sometimes what's challenging is, you know, we're going to have a long-term relationship, so we want to be able to work with people that we enjoy being around. And also to have similar goals in terms of like, you know, for us, like the partnership is a cash flow play to a degree. So like, is that what they're looking for? And in terms of like what we bring to the table. So, you know, we run a short-term rental from A to Z. And so is this more of like a passive investment for a partner? And that might be more ideal for us because then, you know, we can have the autonomy. We run everything and, you know, they collect their monthly check for, you know, the distributions that we provide.
You mean you don't want somebody to come in and tell you how to do the layout and the design and what the paint color should be?
You know, it's
my point is that you guys know what you're doing. Yeah. And that right. is what operator, if you are going to be an operator, you should know what you're doing and what works. Yeah. And you guys are confident in that. And that's why you're saying the ideal investor is somebody who wants to be passive and not to be hands-on and make the color choices and things like that.
Yeah. And I think we do involve them to an extent, right? Like when we're designing the space, we'll typically share that with them. Any major decisions around the property, like we will typically go over that with them as well. But yeah, like the minutia of the day-to-day grind, like I'm not going to reach out to the partner and say, hey, how do you want us to respond to this message? Right. So there's some balancing there. But Omid, one thing you mentioned, and I want to touch on this because I think it's important to call out, is you talked about like goals and things like that. And I think that's one space where like me, Sarah, and Omid really kind of balance each other out, right? Like, so we had like our annual planning meeting maybe like a month ago, right? Like coming up on a month ago. And like, yeah. Like Omid, like share what your goal was and share what my goal was and share kind of like where we landed.
You know, it's like Tony's like, yeah, you know, no big deal. I just want like $5 billion in real estate acquisitions over the course of the next 10 years. And then I was like, and then of course, Sarah's like, wait, billion with a B or with an M? Like, and, you know, for me, I'm like, let me look at my answer because we're sharing answers. And I'm like, let me adjust mine. And I forgot where Sarah was, but I mean, I think for me, I was like maybe like 100 million or, you know, something's pretty, I was going to say 500 million, but I had to change my answer because I was like, okay, let's be more realistic, somewhere in the middle. And, you know, I think we landed on 1 billion. But I think it's just funny. I think the one thing, so like, you know, we talk about our partnerships, like what are like some pros and cons of partnerships and like, what are your pet peeves? And like, Tony's like, you know, what I love about him is that he always is like setting the bar super high. And sometimes for me, like, I'm always trying to assess, okay, is this realistic? Like, is he being crazy again? Like, and, but you know, I think that's what I'm trying to assess. And like, I'm trying to find some middle ground. I'm like, okay, this is more realistic. But, and then Sarah's like, you know, she just, you know, on maybe on the other end of the spectrum a little bit, like, hey, let's just do like, you mean more work? We're going to have more work. Like, is this realistic? Like, and so, but yeah, no, I think it's kind of fun to kind of have those discussions to kind of figure out what makes sense, based on goals and you know, seeing where we land. I mean, a great example of that was, and Sarah likes to share the story, where she, like, Tony told the realtor after we closed on the first Joshua Tree property, all right, we're going to close one per quarter moving forward. And then the Joshua Tree realtor was like, what? Like, he's like, there's no, like, he just had this, like, reaction, like, and he, you know, his personality, he's like, I don't want to, like, can I use the B word? Like, is that allowed? Like, he just he has a very strong personality, and his reaction was just like, he's very sassy. That's like a more PG term. He's more sassy. But, you know, fast forward, and we were able to close, I think, like one a month or something like that. So we're able to kind of go beyond. So I think, I know you guys talk a lot about like mindset and limiting beliefs. And I think sometimes we get caught in that, like, for me, I was like, okay, I have my one short-term rental in Tennessee. I'm good. I'm done. And then, you know, Tony, like a month later, is like, hey, what about Joshua Tree? And then I was like, oh, I don't like Joshua Tree. That place is not interesting to me. But again, that was kind of me rolling with the punches. I'm like, all right, let's try it. So, and it was like already an existing Airbnb, so there was a little bit less risk. It was already like an established property. But this property was what it was producing, I think it was like 30,000 gross. And I mean, if we would have kept it, we ended up selling it. But if we would have kept it, that easily would have been $100,000 grossing property. So that's the irony. And, he, you know, Tony doing the research on Joshua Tree and, you know, me trying to maybe sometimes we got to be aware of like our biases of like, okay, this may not be a place I may want to travel, but this is the data proves that there's a huge demand. And so now it's changed my attitude around, okay, just because maybe I don't like this particular vacation rental market, it may not mean that it's in high demand. So I'm going to default to Tony. He's like the geek when it comes to software. And it's like, he busts out all this like data. And I'm like, sold. I'm good. Okay.
He's a lady in the streets and a freak of the spreadsheets.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When Bigger Pockets started podcasting, no one thought we needed a store. But then books, so many books, best-selling books, rookie books, partnership books. We needed the best real estate bookstore ever, so we chose Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch stage to the first order stage to the did we just sell out the whole store stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling real estate books or retro clothing, Shopify's platform helps you sell everywhere, online or in person. Now, speaking of online, did you know Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better than other leading commerce platforms? And no matter how big you grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control of your business. And that's why we chose Shopify for the Bigger Pockets bookstore. So sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/BP Rookie, all lowercase. Again, go to shopify.com/BP Rookie now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/BP Rookie. We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a complete breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. So Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability and earnings. With Plaid certified tenant income and asset reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. It's time to say goodbye to that whole gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. Now, Rent Ready is included in your pro membership at Bigger Pockets. If you're not a pro, they're offering the 6-month plan for only $1. Visit rentready.com. That's RENTREDI.com and use the code BP Investor. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, Investor for 6 months of Rent Ready for only $1.
Okay, so before we move on to a different topic, Omid, I just have to ask, and Tony too, do you guys have weekly calls? How are you guys staying intact as a team? What does that look like? You know, you had your annual meeting. Do you have quarterly meetings? Is it you guys are just constantly texting each other? What are your lines of communication like?
So, I mean, you can't text Tony because you've seen his phone. I mean, like, you know, I don't know if he ever sees it or not. I mean, I know, like, Sarah's his chastity belt, right, for messaging?
Yeah. Like, I actually messaged her. I had a question about, like, Airbnb locks the other day. I just texted her to ask. Yeah,
of course. Yeah, it's funny because it's like, okay, if I need something done, I'm gonna do the group text that includes Sarah that I know she'll tell him. Because it's like sometimes it's like, we need these docs signed and where's Tony? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I know, but I don't know. I'm like, okay, he's not going to respond. Let me just tell Sarah to tell him to sign the docs. But, you know, it's So Tony's version of yelling at you is basically he'll send you a task, right? So like that's like, you know, because he like, does he get upset? Like, I don't know if he ever raises his voice. He just does like he kind of like squints his eyes and then he just kind of looks to the side. So I don't know if you ever seen those videos with like him and Sarah. He'll just kind of like look to the side and that's his version of like, I'm pissed. So if he, I don't know if he's done that to you yet, but you know, if he does, that's his.
I'm definitely going to notice now if he does.
Man, yeah, that's a signal. So I interpret like, okay, he's sending me a task. Uh-oh, I must not be doing something right. So we use Monday. So we use Monday.com and that's kind of our version. We originally were using Rike. We've transitioned to Monday. And, you know, we have kind of a combo of Monday and just text messaging. So I think we use Monday just overall kind of like action to do's. And if there's anything that needs more immediate attention, we'll just send messages, just text message. And, I feel like I'm privileged because he responds to mine sometimes. So it's like pretty good. Yeah. No, but, yeah. So I would just say it's a combination of those things. And Sarah and I were very late adopters to Rike. So like Tony would yell at, like, again, not yell at us. He'd do the side eye thing. And it was just like, hey, can you guys like look at your task? And we're like, what task? Oh yeah, Rike. So I think that's like his, that's like very organized side. And, you know, let's say Sarah and I maybe are a little more scatterbrained with some of those things. We're very task driven, but I think he keeps us organized. So now we've been better adopters of Monday, and that's allowed us to stay more organized, especially as we're scaling. There's no other way other than to just leverage a system, so that way, because we're including more people as we're starting to grow.
Omid, I hate to burst your bubble, but Tony actually has an alert set in Monday to remind himself to text you every once in a while just to check in. It's actually gone off while we've been on the podcast before.
That's awesome. Okay. Oh, man.
But I really want to get into the exciting part. And one of the biggest reasons we've brought you on today, we had my business partner, Daryl Clinch, on not too long ago talking about him quitting his job. And
I saw that.
Now you have quit your job too. Yeah. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I think it was maybe a month or maybe 6 weeks before you actually quit. We had been in the Smoky Mountains together. And I have to say, if you knew you were going to quit your job then, you did not like show it at all to me. I was shocked when you announced it and you were like talking about how you'd eventually like to. So congratulations.
No, thank you so much. Like, you know, for me, it was just like, so I was in almost in denial because I was just so used to the mindset of I wake up, I do my job, I go home, I collect my paycheck. And I think so many people get into that routine and they're afraid to make that decision. And, you know, Tony approached me. So it was actually at the Bigger Pockets event in New Orleans. He approached me, caught me completely off guard. And, you know, I didn't know what to say at the time. I was just like, he must have planned this like way in advance because he's like that. Like he already like has it all planned out like a mind shark. Like he just like mind tricks on me. And so I was like, oh, all right. So it's same reaction I had to like every deal we've done. All right. Like, but my wife, she was there at the time. And, you know, I think she was very supportive. And so I, you know, after I committed to it, I started doing the math in my head. So I know in Daryl's episode, you guys kind of talked about that. So like when he was presenting it to me, I was doing the math in my head. I was like, okay, this is my gross income. This is my net income. This is what I contribute for my 401k. So I had a six-figure job. And then I contributed like 20-something percent a year to my 401k. So with a company match, it was probably 30K before compounding on that every year that would be contributed to my 401k. So my original plan before Tony approached me was, okay, I was 40 at the time. When I hit 45, I'll have $1 million in my 401k. And at that point, I feel comfortable where there's a safety net and I'll walk away from my W-2 and do anything I want. I mean, at the time, I was like, okay, let me get more involved in short-term rental. So I had a five-year plan. fast forward, we were, that was probably what, a year and a half after getting involved in short-term rentals that I ended up quitting my job. And I think that the what pushed me was one, with Tony, but two, thinking about all the things that I've always wanted to do, but was too afraid to do. And I think hopefully this speaks to a lot of listeners. Like when you think about wealth, a lot of people define it as, you know, financial wealth, but they don't look at all the other things. You see these TikToks and it's like, the new wealth is time and experiences. And so, but that really speaks to me because I think for me, it just, okay. So I feel like I have all the basic necessities. And so there are other areas that I really want to kind of work on. So the time piece, so having the time wealth, physical wealth, so just being in better shape. I see so many people that were in corporate jobs, like a lot of my peers, and you know, they're my age and they look like they're 50. So, you know, I'm trying to do the opposite. I'm like, how can I stay looking like Tony and Sarah, and, you know, and... So hopefully if I'm just around them, it'll just force me to look like them. I don't know. I have my black shirt, by the way. My black shirt. So I never liked wearing black shirts, but Tony said it's required now that I'm a part of Alpha Geek. So I don't know if that, you know.
That's the uniform.
That's the uniform. Like it's like the black shirt. So yeah. So, but yeah. So financial wealth, social wealth, time wealth, and physical wealth. So those are the four. And a lot of times people trade their time and their physical wealth for that financial piece. And I had friends who are attorneys, who are doctors, and they have no time for their families. They don't go to any of the, they can't coach. They can't go to any of the games. They're consistently tired. So I thought about it and it's like, okay, I get my time back. And fast forward, now I've been able to coach. I was doing Orange Theory and I was the, they had like this like dry try like competition, which is basically like a, you know, overall fitness like competition. And I was like, I had the top time for males in my gym, and like I would have never done that under the circumstances I had before because I was able to commit to it every day. And then I've been able to drop off my kids at school, pick them up and drop them off. Before COVID, I never did that once, like, and I missed out on so many years of that. And being able to do that. And now there's just so much upside in terms of like opportunities long term. So I was willing to trade my salary for those things. And I think I was afraid. I was afraid of giving up that salary. But I think in the long run, I'm going to be a lot more happy. I'm already, you know, have way more flexibility. And, you know, what I want to do is be able to like inspire others to do the same. Because I think so many people are stuck in the, they want to work. They're afraid to walk away from their six-figure job. They've done all the right things, but they're just afraid to take the risk or walk away from a six-figure job.
So, Omid, you took a pay cut, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I did take a pay cut. Yes.
Okay. So were there any things that you had to cut out of your life, or was that just like you, your, that was your extra money anyways, or did you have to kind of rearrange your budget that you have for, you know, your livelihood?
So I've always consistently lived way below my means, and I've always just needed a few things: the gym, the beach, somewhere to hike, hang around the kids, some good food, and that's it. Like, I don't need a lot of like fancy things, like and so I think for me, I've been able to just maintain a lifestyle living. I could probably live off of a, I don't know what income, but when the way I structured even my pay, I would always, I'd have increases in my pay, but I always lived off of 4K net income. So that was, no matter what my income was, it was always, my paycheck was every month was $4,000. Mm-hmm. And so even though I was making six figures, even though I was getting bonuses, it didn't matter because I put all the additional income into my 401k so that I could compound it faster at a younger age. So that's the way I thought about it. So my 401k became, I, you know, I'm doing the same pay now, but my 401k, instead of it being invested in stocks, and it's now invested in real estate. So through acquisitions that we have. I have a percentage of ownership, and that's allowed me to still kind of grow my my retirement portfolio. And that's how I've been able to kind of justify it while getting back kind of some of those other things. So I feel like financially I'm in the same position, if not better. Socially, I always wanted to be active in social media, but I never had time. That was like a very low priority item. And when I was working my W-2, it required a lot of hours. And so now I've been able to allocate some time for that. The time piece with family, traveling. I've traveled more in the past 6 months than I have in the past 2 years. And they're just, every month there's where we're going somewhere. Shout out to my wife for allowing this for enabling me to go and travel, because she gets comments all the time from people, a lot of naysayers who say, oh, he's gone again. Oh, okay. Like, and I feel like they're stirring the pot in a way, but I think sometimes people don't necessarily understand kind of what's going on, or like what sort of dedication I have to kind of like the long-term play in terms of like the real estate piece. Because maybe right now, today, the income's the same, but I think you look fast forward 5-10 years, and there's a larger trajectory just like our financial independence.
A couple things I want to highlight, right? So like when you look at going full time into the business, there's the benefits that you mentioned, obviously. I think another big one is that you accelerate your ability to scale, right? Like when we first started Alpha Geek Capital, the only person that was full time in the business was Sarah, my wife. And she was really just focused on like the guest communication side of things, right? But she wasn't focused on like growing the business per se. And then when I went full time at the beginning of 2021, we went from, we had two, almost three units when that year started. And we ended that year with what, like 11 or 12, right? So we scaled a ton in those 12 months. And now we just finished Q1. And with you being full time, I think we've already closed or under contract, like we got like 9 properties already this year, right? So it's like as you add more fuel to that fire and you free up more time by going full time, you're it's like an exponential curve that you're on when it comes to the growth.
Yeah, it's like taking that short amount of time that you're going to be taking that pay cut so that you can mm-hmm. build up and get to yeah. that replacement salary. And let me ask you this. So at your old job, was it a set salary that you knew how much you were getting every month, or was it like commission based where it changed? And then how does that compare to how your pay is now? Did you kind of have to adjust when income was coming in and kind of when you had to pay your bills and things like that?
Yeah. So nothing's really changed in terms of like my lifestyle or income. I think for me, it was essentially at a fixed salary, and and then there was a bonus structure. So there's a bonus depending on how the company had performed. So at the end of the year, you would see anywhere from like a 15 to 30K bonus, I would say.
Yeah.
So that bonus is nice at the end of the year. I mean, then you can kind of use that to invest or, whatever it is that you want to do. But in terms of the fixed salary, I'm contributing a big percentage into my 401k. So I had the fixed amount every month. So in terms of the fixed amount, it matches. So there's nothing has really changed in that sort of piece. What was the question again?
I think it's not really going to apply to you, but what would be your advice? You seem pretty money savvy. What would be your advice to somebody who is going from a fixed salary to, okay, now yeah. they're getting, they have multiple income streams from their different sure. properties or something that they're going to be living off that might change? Like,
yeah.
oh, this month yeah. we have to replace a hot water heater. Your cash flow is not going to be as much or things like that. Sure. What would be your advice to kind of plan that out? Because that can be scary, getting that fixed income every single month going to a variable income.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, we're very fortunate in terms of like the cash flow for the short-term rentals. But I think just identifying like what you can live off of and setting a reserve. So, I mean, we have a reserve kind of set aside just for anything that could happen. And I know people's idea of reserve varies. Some people aren't as liquid. They put all their money into stocks or, you know, or invest whatever type of investment. But I think the idea is, for us, what we felt comfortable with was, okay, I had, between my wife and I, we had four different short-term rental loans in our names. So in terms of debt to income for traditional loans, we weren't going to qualify for any more loans that were traditional. We'd have to go into like a DSCR loan or some other commercial loan product. So at that point, I felt like, okay, the leverage of the W-2 income and the salary, it didn't have as much benefit by being in the job anymore. So I think like the name of the game for me was like cash flow. So how can I create cash flow that'll replace my income and through these assets? And so the niche that was identified was short-term rentals. And so with that, just you can walk away with one or two. Like, it doesn't require that much. And so it's just a matter of finding the right location that works for you. And do you have the appetite to run your own Airbnb business? Some people don't. Yeah, some people don't have the personality or the time or the know-how. And not everybody has a Tony J, you know, who just busts out data, you know, like in their sleep. So, but maybe it's finding a partner that does. So I think that's, for me, what I was able to do was, okay, I can do operations. I can talk to people. I can build teams. If somebody's in that same position and they have capital and they have a good paying job, find somebody who's good at systems, who likes data, and, you know, go to these Facebook groups, go to local, meetup events. And there's so many people who are just wanting to get their feet wet and just need the one person to maybe partner with.
Yeah, I think the other thing I want to comment on, Omid, is like how we kind of manage cash flow, because we do it, I think, a little bit differently than other real estate investors. So for the rookies that are listening, Ashley and I interviewed Mike Michalowicz on one of our rookie replies. I think it was episode 132. And Mike, we interviewed him about a book called Get Different, but Mike also has a book called Profit First. And in that book, Profit First, he breaks down how entrepreneurs should manage their cash flow. It's a relatively quick read, but a really impactful one if you implement it. And that's what we've done in our business. So every month, we don't really look at we look at them, but we don't really manage our distributions based on the net cash flow, right? Like if a property nets, you know, $1,000, we're not going to look at that as the money that we distribute. Instead, we use a percentage of the bank balance every month. So every month on the 25th, I go into each one of the accounts for every one of our properties, and I see how much capital do we have available in the actual bank account. And then we have different percentages set up for different ways we allocate the funds. So a certain percentage gets held back for operating expenses. Another percentage gets held back for taxes. Another percentage gets held back for our salaries. And then another percentage gets held back for profit distributions. And so we take a small salary every month for running the business. But then throughout the quarter, we have this big profit bucket that's building month over month. And at the end of every quarter, we take a profit distribution as well. So that's kind of how we've managed our cash flow as well.
I think that's great, you guys. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Omid doesn't have to worry about that end of things. Just, you know, it just shows up in his bank account.
He just gets a check.
He doesn't know where it comes from. Yeah. Did you guys want to share a deal with us at all for your deal review?
Okay, yeah. So
go ahead. I'll let you guys tag team it.
You going to do La Flora?
Yeah, whichever one, man. You pick one. Dive into it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, La Flora. So this is one. It's an off-market deal. So we have a relationship with a builder. He essentially comes to us and says, hey, I have a tiny home in Joshua Tree. Are you guys interested? We say yes. And then, so I think the purchase price on this one was, it's a 400 square foot tiny home in Joshua Tree. $333,
mm-hmm.
I think, was the purchase price on it.
But Omi, before you keep going, I think, you know, you glossed over that, like dive into that a little bit, right? So like one of our secret weapons in Joshua Tree has been our ability to get off-market deals. You know, we've gone direct to seller, we've worked with wholesalers, but one of our unique strategies is going direct to builder. So Omi, maybe if you want to talk about how we built that relationship and how beneficial it's been for both parties.
Yeah, so we So Tony had identified this tiny home in Joshua Tree, and I was not a fan. I was like, how much is it per square foot? And what's so big about these? You know, again, talking about biases and like, it's not a good property. And, you know, of course, trust the process. So fast forward, he's like, yeah, let's make an offer. And like I normally do. Okay, let's just do it, you know? And so so I went ahead and I approached the person who was selling the property, who was also the builder. And so I was trying to ask a lot of questions to identify specifically how we could get this one under contract or how we could be competitive. So I asked a lot of questions. I realized he's a mass builder. He wanted somebody who can close quickly, and he didn't want a lot of nonsense. So not too many questions. Don't bother him. Like, his time was very valuable. And he really had zero patience for people in general. So I basically told him, and he wanted to build a long-term relationship because he's a builder. He wanted to also be able to build on the particular lot or on a future lot. So I essentially listened, identified what was important to him. And I told him, hey, look, we're short-term rental investors. We're looking to scale. We're interested in your product. And how can we be... you know, what is a number that would be competitive for us to be able to not only secure this, but also buy future deals? We proved that we could close. So we ended up, he accepted our offer. I think it was asking price. So we offered asking price, and we accept the offer. We closed right away, no issues. And then fast forward a couple months, and he had another property. And so... he essentially at this point just started approaching us and said, hey, look, I have this property. Ironically, this one property led to another three. And then there was additional, I think we had seven under contract with him. And then now we're going to be at 11 tiny homes with him particularly. And, you know, the irony is, these tiny homes, there's such a high demand, but this is the challenge for somebody that wants to buy these. One, typically you're going to have to hire a builder. The turnaround time is what, a year from planning. So nobody's going to sell these because they spent so much time like into like engineering. And so, and then the few that ever go on market sell way above market. So we're able to get them at pretty much market price, and off market. So he now comes to us. Few things. He likes that we close quickly. He likes that we are low maintenance, and we have good communication with him. We try to just, you know, he's kind of a grumpy guy a little bit. And so it just like, how can we keep things positive, but like, and maintain a positive relationship. So it's worked out really nicely.
It's been mutually beneficial because for us, actually, like, we have a very consistent source of deal flow for a property that we know has performed well. It's easier on his side because he doesn't have to worry about listing the property, you know, dealing with different sellers or someone getting under contract and then backing out. So it's really been a mutually beneficial relationship. And like Omid said, by the time this episode airs, we'll have bought 11 houses from this guy. And they all perform really well. So, Omid, sorry, you know, I didn't mean to get you off tangent there, but if we want to go back to the floor and maybe walk through what we picked that one up for.
Yeah, so this one we purchased, I'm going to say Q4 November-ish of last year. I'm going to say October, November-ish. It's all becoming a blur. But 333, 10% down loan. It required about, what, 20K furnishings plus, you know, design, et cetera, et cetera. So total out of pocket, it's going to be probably close, like between like 65-ish, I'm going to say, with like closing costs. So this particular property has actually become our best performing property. So ironically, one day, so this is supposed to gross, this will easily gross maybe 110 to 120. And the price point being 333, like you can't find properties at that price point for that type of gross. Usually you're going to have to spend 600 plus to get that sort of gross. And 600 is on the conservative side. Usually it's more like 700-800 to get a gross of 120K. Sarah, she designed it and I was not a fan. I'm always not a fan. I'm just like, It's kind of funny, but I wasn't a fan of her design. She's like, hey, what do you think? And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, it'll either do really well or it's not going to do well. I think that was my reaction. Like, I think that was my response. And we agreed to, like, proceed forward with the design, and it became the most popular design of all our tiny homes. So it's actually our now become our consistently most sought out tiny home. And I think it's like booked out like 2 months in advance or so, give or take. And we got to raise rates clearly, because it's like, you know, we're not charging enough. But yeah, it's doing well. Cash on cash return is probably 50%+.
Omid, I think that's a really great point to touch on, is that you have these tiny homes that are all the identical layout, but it's the design. And the design has made such an impact on that one that it's outperforming the other one. So I think that's a lot of people, and even I did this for my first Airbnb, was go and, hey, who has furniture laying around in their basement that they don't want anymore that I can throw in my Airbnb? And you just proved that taking the time to actually design it and add that aesthetic to it can really give you a way better return than just throwing in mismatched furniture that you find on the side of the road or from, you know, your parents' basement.
No, I think that's a great point, because when we look at the portfolio itself, we've optimized and kind of made adjustments along the way. So because we've had the same model, we've been able to kind of get feedback from guests and even from like social media. And we've been able to kind of keep making different adjustments along the way. And I think we've have a more polished product moving forward because of it. But we also, when we launch these, we are launching them more polished than they were initially. I think our very first one, I think we initially looked at it and we were like, okay, this is going to gross about 40K. Then Tony's like, oh yeah, we'll do 60, no problem. And of course I'm a skeptic and I'm not believing it. I'm like, there's no way this place is going to do 60. And we've made modifications along the way. And I think what happened is, like, during summertime, which is, I would say, like, the low season because of the heat, we really had to look at, okay, how can we make our property stand out so that way we can make it gross even during low season. So we made a few adjustments to the property. And at that point, from September on, every month, it kept the gross kept going up to now, like, it's averaging close to, like, nine plus K a month since we made the adjustments to that property. So that this property will do 100K plus. And the irony is, like, again, limiting beliefs and thinking, oh, okay, this can only do so much. But I think it just continuing to do your education, receive feedback from your guests, make the adjustments, and try to optimize the property so you know, guests want to come back.
Awesome, brother. So yeah, we've had some definite success with those tiny homes in Joshua Tree, and appreciate you, Omi, for building that relationship, man. So I want to take us to the rookie request line. So for the rookies that are listening, if you would like your question featured, give us a call at 888-5-ROOKIE, and maybe we'll play your question on the show. So Omid, partner, are you ready for today's question?
Oh man, I don't know. I'm like not prepared, but let's try it.
All right. So today's question is from John from Fairfax, Virginia. And John says, I have a question about putting offers on deals. You guys talk a lot about putting offers on, but not on having the financing lined up. And I'm wondering, how do you do that? How does a seller have the patience to get you to put the deal together? You know, it might take some time to get partners or a bank to get approval on the deal. So what's running around my head is, how are you making offers without having any financing lined up right away? Love to hear you guys talk about that. And that's funny, I mean, because we do that all the time, right? Like, we're like, just get under contract and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You want to control the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true. And I think it depends on, like, your, it's going to completely vary depending on your local market and what the market environment is. And then building a relationship with your realtor, what sort of experience you have. So if you can't get pre-qualified, I mean, you should definitely get pre-qualified to get some sort of loan, whether it, even if it's a, a hard money lender. So sometimes you may not, let's say, not qualify for like a traditional loan. If you get, if I build a relationship with a hard money lender where you get something, that's a great place to start. I don't know, like, Tony, do you have any, I feel like you always have the great answer. So I'm going to go
back. I mean, yeah. I think the only thing I'd add is that, like, whenever you put a property under contract, like, you always have your financing contingency, right? So worst case scenario, if you're not able to figure that out within that time frame, just make sure you cancel the contract before your financing contingency. But I would try and exhaust every option before you have to cancel, because I think the second you start canceling on people, that's when you kind of build the wrong reputation. So I would use the financing contingency if I needed it. But first, yeah, hard money, private money, partners. Like, if it's a good deal, I'm going to be going to everybody that I know saying, hey, please, please, please work. Not even please, but hey, here's a great opportunity. Work with me on this deal.
Yeah, I think we went to a Ryan Pineda event, and then the quote they used was, if it's a good deal, money will follow. So I think just find that good deal and money will follow. And that's whether you post it on social media, whether you're posting it in like local groups. There's always somebody who has the capital who's looking for that deal, and they don't have the access to the deal flow. So if you can bring the deal, I'm sure money will follow.
Okay. Omid, I'm going to take us to our rookie exam. Now, this is graded, and this will actually be reported as to whether or not you stay employed by Alpha Geek Capital. Oh. So the pressure is on.
You know, I feel like I'm in college, and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to get into like some sort of like organization, like a Greek organization, and like, this is the hazing process. Like, this do I get accepted hazing into the club or not?
Omid, what is the return on investment, the ROI, based on the cash flow from the third Joshua Tree property you bought? The clock starts now.
I'm going to say it's like 100+%. Okay. 100+. Yeah.
Okay. What is one actual thing rookies should do after listening to this episode?
Yeah. So assess your threshold for discomfort, because I think a lot of people, they get this idea, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. But then when they find out what it really requires in terms of like the extra work, and assess your threshold for that additional work. Are you willing to sacrifice maybe on the weekends, like not hang out with your friends? Are you willing to get uncomfortable? Are you willing to go to a network event and talk to people when you're not comfortable talking to new people? I think all those items are really big. If you're married, like, is your spouse okay with you spending more time away from your family? And can your spouse maybe step up with some of those responsibilities at home? So it's like all those little things that I think sometimes are overlooked before actually getting your feet wet into whatever it is that you want to do.
Awesome, Omid. So question number two, what's one tool, software, app, or system that you use in your business?
I have this one tool, and it's called Tony J. Robinson. Like, he's like the software master. So as long as you have a Tony J, you know, not everybody has a Tony J, but, you know, I think, specifically for our line of business, so Airbnb is, our short-term rentals, it's Hospitable. And I know there's like different substitutes of that, but I think Hospitable really allows us to integrate pricing, messaging, guest experience, communications, all in one. So that's really a lifesaver. I feel like that allows anybody to scale long term. So I would say if it's not Tony, then Hospitable is a close second.
Where do you plan on being in 5 years? So what's half of 100 billion?
Yeah, I feel like we had this discussion, because I feel like there was like a 10-year plan and there's a 5-year plan. And in theory, what, half of that should be 500, but I'm going to say like 300 million in acquisition, because I feel like it'll kind of like skyrocket faster, like as you kind of go towards the end of your journey. So I'm going to say 300 million in acquisitions. More time freedom, leveraging, just growing an organization. And so leveraging the organization and the culture to kind of build.
Awesome, brother. Well, as we round things up, I'm going to highlight today's rookie rock star. And if you would like to be highlighted as a rookie rock star, get active in the Real Estate Rookie Facebook groups, get active in the Bigger Pockets forums, slide into my DMs or into Ashley's DMs. But today's rookie rock star is Andre B. And Andre says, I caught the real estate investing bug a couple of months ago and have been hard at work since trying to secure my first property. Three contracts, two terminations post-inspection. I finally have doors 1, 2, 3, and 4 fully occupied with what seems to be great tenants. And this was a fourplex, all one bedroom, one baths. It was listed at 240. He was able to negotiate down to 210. And then after the inspection, got it down even further to 205. And right now the rents are, or he's going to cash flow about $351 per unit. So amazing job, Andre. Really, really proud of the work you did there.
Andre, high five, man. That's awesome.
Omid, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great to have you. Can you tell everyone where they can reach out to you and find out some more information about you?
Sure. You can find me on IG, Omid, the Rad Investor. So O-M-I-D, the Rad Investor. Or you can find me, alphageekcapital.com. And hopefully I'll be launching my YouTube soon. So you can find me on YouTube, Omid, the Rad Investor. Do I get like a picture? Like, do people ever take pictures with you guys? Like a digital one for their social media? Is that allowed?
No, we charge extra.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. I'm just trying to fanboy a little bit, you know, since I'm on the stage with you guys, this is like an amazing moment. You know, I got to just, and my hair is like, I got a haircut for you guys, you know, just,
Actually, Omid, I already took a picture of us when we first started, before we even started recording. So don't worry, I got you.
There you go. Nice.
Well, Omid, thank you so much for joining us. And to everyone listening, if you guys have enjoyed the podcast and you loved Omid's episode, maybe you actually have a similar story where you have learned from Bigger Pockets and being able to quit your job, we would love to hear about it. Please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. We'd greatly appreciate it. And also share the podcast. If you know somebody that would benefit from getting started in real estate investing, please feel free to share the podcast to them. I'm Ashley at Wealth From Rentals, and he's Tony at Tony J. Robinson. And don't forget that you need to go through Omid, Tony's chastity belt, if you'd like to talk to Tony. And we will be back on Saturday with a rookie reply.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With Bigger Pockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals. Enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. There's free resources only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.